And welcome back to Green Left Radio. We are joined by Kamala Emanuel, who is a longtime abortion activist and member of Socialist Alliance. Thanks for joining us, Kamala.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, as I'm sure we've all heard and we've just talked about, the U.S. Supreme Court has overturned Roe v. Wade. So, and we're here with Kamala to talk a bit about what are the implications in the U.S. and kind of how does it relate to the Australian context? So, Jacob, do you want to go to the first question?
Yeah. So I guess the first kind of question I want to sort of ask you, Kamala, is I guess as a long-time, you know, abortion rights campaigner, what can you comment about the significance of the overturning of Roe versus Wade in the United States?
Thanks very much. And I should have said when I was saying g'day before, I'm coming to you from Meanjin, which is Turrbal and Jagera country in Brisbane. So what we can say about this this ruling is that it is not unexpected and it is not the last attack that we're going to see, but it's devastating. So for 50 years since the Roe versus Wade established the constitutional protection of abortion for women and pregnant people across the United States, the conservatives who are opposed to abortion have used a range of tactics to try to take back that right or to undermine it in various ways. And you know, in the 80s, it took the form of clinic bombings and attacks and throwing acid in the faces of women who were presenting for care, you know, murdering and assassinating abortion providers, and numerous other kind of physical attacks. So that was, you know, one set of tactics. There has also been this sort of both this kind of joint judicial and legal kind of restriction. So you could say attacking abortion access cut by cut by cut by cut. So it has been that there are already numerous states where people who have got public health insurance, the Medicaid or Medicare for their health, protect health insurance in general, are not allowed to use that to pay for an abortion should they need it. So that has already put a safe abortion care out of the hands of many, many people across the United States. There have been other attacks that have happened over the years that were things like a whole lot of restrictions and on the ways clinics could operate. I'll give you an example, requiring that clinic, which many of them are not sort of very well resourced, they're not very rich, they're just services that exist, requiring them to buy and have functioning neonatal intensive care facilities in the abortion facility. When they're performing abortions, there are never babies born in these facilities, but they're expected to have the resuscitation equipment just in case. So there's a whole lot of these things that are just regulations to restrict access and force clinics to close. You know, it might be the number of stories you're allowed to have a clinic operating out, or width of the doors, or whatever it might be, that regulation after regulation have cut the capacity of abortion facilities to stay open. So this is just the kind of the culmination of these. And it's been part of the long game of stacking, first of all, state legislatures with legislators who are opposed to abortion who could line up these cases so that they'd be firstly have laws that were ready to go at the state level, have laws that contravened this constitutional protection so that they would have to be taken to the Supreme Court to be defended. And then simultaneously this process of stacking the Supreme Court with justices who are opposed to abortion and who would be prepared to strike down Roe versus Wade. So this is many years in the making, a very deliberate process of attacking the constitutional protection of the of abortion access, and you know, including I might add Supreme Court justices who, when they were being confirmed, said that Roe versus Wade was settled in law. So they're basically people who were prepared to lie to say, oh, I wouldn't undermine it, you couldn't, but have just revealed their hand that yes, of course, they were always going to do this. So so it is a huge attack. So while there have been attacks and so on, now all of a sudden there are 9 states where abortion is banned, and there are another 17 where the state governments have basically promised that they will bring in abortion bans. And there are lots of states where there are already, partial restrictions or, quite onerous restrictions, going from 15 weeks or less where you, beyond that you can't access abortion. So it's dire, and it's dire because it means that a very, very fundamental right, which is of a person who's capable of becoming pregnant, deciding whether or not they're going to continue a pregnancy once they are pregnant. And it, ultimately what it means is forced birth. You don't get to decide anymore whether you can, whether it's up to you to give birth, to bring a baby into the world. It's that right is taken away from you. And that's more than half the population, potentially at risk, from the severe consequences of this legislation.
Yeah. One of my favourite descriptions I've heard of the quote-unquote pro-life movement is the pro-state-enforced pregnancy movement.
Yeah, it would be completely wrong to call them pro-life. There's just nothing pro-life about it, because if you don't recognise the life of the woman who is pregnant or the pregnant person, then what life are you talking about? And, of course, they don't care about, so many of these conservatives, of course there are exceptions, but so many of these legislators don't care what happens to the baby once they're born, what kind of a life, what kind of a quality of life, are they going to have access to education or healthcare or what sort of life is it going to be? And, of course, this is the kind of reason that informs someone to make a decision to have termination, if they know they're not in a position to be able to raise a child, or even if they're not in a position to continue a pregnancy, whether it's for their health or because they can't afford the astronomical costs of antenatal care and giving birth in the United States. When, think of having a baby, you can go to the public hospital and have your baby in a public hospital and get whatever care you need. That's not what's going on in the United States.
Yeah. I remember I was born 4 weeks premature, and my mom tells me occasionally of when she was reading books about what to do. All of the US books would include a section on how to declare bankruptcy and sell your house and stuff to afford the care.
Imagine.
So that does follow into the next question, though, which is basically the right wing or the anti-abortion movement, particularly the religious right wing, they have this very, definite tendency to talk about the sanctity of life, to talk about preserving life, that sort of thing. But obviously when it comes to the actual policies, they want to strip more money out of feeding kids, out of schools. The Supreme Court, I think during the week before they overturned Roe v. Wade, ruled that the right to carry a firearm with you everywhere you go is protected universally by the Constitution. And I've seen some people making jokes about the new pipeline isn't, birth to death. It's your life exists from conception to school shooting.
Exactly.
So obviously, like you said, the argument of pro-life is nonsense. It's essentially facetious. What do you think the actual motivation for this sort of the anti-abortion right is when it comes to controlling access to abortion or completely denying access to reproductive health?
Yeah, look, there are lots of elements of that. And I totally agree with this idea of just with the importance of recognizing the hypocrisy and the double standard involved in the same political forces opposing abortion being the same people who oppose banning assault rifles, assault weapons, promoting gun use and promoting the death penalty. I mean, so there are a whole lot of these kind of very serious inconsistencies.
Texas has proposed the death penalty for people getting illegal abortion.
Yes. I mean, seriously, how much more absurd does it need to be to demonstrate that it is not for those political forces, those organized political forces, it's not and never has been about protecting any form of right to life. And I draw a distinction between the organized political forces who are using abortion and various other issues to build a political constituency so they've got a base of support from which to launch their whole project. I would draw a distinction between them and individuals caught up in it, individuals who might, maybe they go to church, maybe they heard at church that, you know, God hates abortion. That's what they think is the case. And so they really genuinely do think that it's all about protecting babies and making sure that, that life is protected. So I would draw a distinction because I think that there are people who I would think of as misguided more than anything else who follow that course. Many of these churches deliberately allow themselves to be used to be, you know, places where these right-wing forces can build their bases of support. And the project that they're trying to cohere support for, you know, it's got on the one hand, you know, people who are, you know, crazy about their guns, that's what they love, others who are opposed to abortion rights, others who are opposed to queer rights or trans people, others, you know, there's sort of a whole range of things that come together. Many of these people may not actually have otherwise supported the rest of this right-wing neoconservative project, the whole neoliberalism of attacking of free trade, attacking regulation and peeling back all our rights and privatising everything. Not everyone would support that in and of itself. And so there are certainly these bases of support, particularly in the for people opposed to abortion. They build up this base of support for a right-wing economic and political project that I'm not sure that there would be that support for it otherwise, because they're very anti-people, but it allows them to position themselves as the champion of good, you know, whether it's family values or you know, babies being born or various other things. And so I think it's quite manipulative, and it allows them to appeal to emotion rather than to say, oh, really what we want is to make the rich richer and screw the rest of you. But we can't say that, so it's all about the babies.
Yeah.
Sorry, just was muted there. And I guess the next kind of question that kind of follows to that is, I guess, what are some of your comments on abortion rights for women in Australia? Because, like, obviously the situation in Australia for abortion is much better than it is in the United States. In fact, when you look at the United States, it almost seems like they're going back to the sort of dark ages. But of course, we don't necessarily have perfect laws and perfect sort of access to abortion. So I guess I want to sort of, especially as someone who's been campaigning actively on this issue, can you give an overview of, you know, the situation for abortion rights for women in Australia? What is its strengths and limitations?
I think you're right, and I think it's important, as important as it is to recognise what's going on in the US and to recognise that that it is a threat to abortion access around the world when the leading dominant country on the planet enacts something so retrograde. Like, yes, that will embolden anti-abortion forces all around the world, including Australia. However, I think we, on the one hand, should recognise that things aren't kind of immediately dire here on account of that, but they're not as good as they should be. So whereas in the US it was, 73 that Roe versus Wade established the constitutional right to privacy that protected abortion, Australia, we never did that, right? So it's been state by state piecemeal, about 50 years has been just gradual legal reform. And so it's only been in the last few years that the last states have actually got abortion to be legal. And this has been the outcome of, you know, years of hard patient work, partly campaigning in the streets, partly the kind of behind the scenes kind of campaigning that's happened, you know, in the states and territories. So we've sort of much more recently tasted the victory of, oh, gee, abortion's legal now. And so it's much, it's not at all going to be any kind of easy thing to have that rolled back, which is not to say that, you know, state Liberal Party branches and federal Liberal Party members and whatever aren't opposed to abortion. Like, they still do take to their state conferences motions opposing abortion and calling for it to be banned and all of this sort of thing. But a lot of that is much more about shoring at that right-wing conservative religious base for the Liberal Party and its project, rather than because they can see themselves actually enacting any of that stuff anytime soon. The truth is, every time, you know, in the last sort of 40, 50 years, attempts to get rid of Medicare funding for abortion or a whole lot of things has been overturned, hasn't been able to be enacted. So it's very unlikely to see that. But what we do see is unequal access across Australia. So partly it's state by state. Different states have got different gestational limits. So if you go to in WA, it's 20 weeks. If it's if you're in Queensland, it's 22. If you're in Victoria, it's 24. Like, so different states have different cutoffs, which is obviously not fair. And across the states, by and large, apart from South Australia, where access through the public hospitals has been mandated because it wasn't allowed to be provided outside the public hospital systems, which meant that you could get your abortion for free, actually, in South Australia. Around the rest of the country, on the whole, there's a lot of, you know, a bit of a lucky dip if you're in the postcode where your local health area, hospital and health area, provides abortion in the hospital or not. And it's a lot to do with, does your GP know the pathway to refer you? Or is there some kind of an arrangement with the hospital and a private provider where you can get your abortion paid for? So the cost of abortion is disproportionately and, you know, unequally, unevenly shared around the country. Some people are able to access their the abortion they need through the public hospital system. Some people can get some or all of it paid for by Medicare. And some people are paying hundreds of dollars, $400, $500, and that's just for $550, maybe up to 12 weeks of pregnancy, and then thousands of dollars on top, you know, for later weeks of gestation. So there's this very, very unequal, unfair thing going on in terms of the cost of abortion, which is obviously a very working class issue. If you're working class or poor, and you've got to try to find the money for this sort of thing, that can make it out of your reach. Also for regional women, like one of the main private providers of abortion care around Australia closed their clinic in Townsville, Rockhampton, on the Gold Coast, and in Newcastle last year. And so for regional women, where those were the only services available, it's meant, like in Queensland, women are travelling so far to obtain a surgical abortion if they need one. I mean, on the plus side, I guess, just kind of to skirt around a little bit, medical abortion has become more accessible since it's available through telehealth. So many people can access medication abortion, where you take some tablets to induce an abortion. And it is possible for some people to access that by telehealth. So that's a bit of an equaliser, but it's not everyone's preference to have to be awake and aware through the whole procedure that's like bringing on a miscarriage. Some people would prefer to be able to, you know, have an anaesthetic, off to sleep, wake up and the thing's completed. And that's not readily accessible everywhere. You can't just, you know that you can be referred to your local public hospital and have it provided. So I think that leaves us a lot of openings for where we need to go to make abortion accessible and not just settle for it being free, legal, because if it's not free and it's not accessible, then there's a whole swathe of the population who have to, you know, either can't access it at all or else have to, you know, forego other things because they can't afford it.
I think that's a really good point, for sure. Like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Western Australia's abortion law still requires that the person seeking an abortion needs two doctors even before 20 weeks.
That's right.
And
yeah,
so,
that's right.
Like you were saying, as much as there is limited access in regional areas, it's in some cases finding just the number of health professionals that you need to could be difficult.
Oh, it's terrible. I've met women who have, like, I'm the fifth doctor they've gone to for their referral. I used to work in services in WA, and you know that people when doctors refuse to provide the referral, I mean, what do they think someone's going to do? Especially if you're in a small town, it becomes this. Like, I've had patients who've become outside the gestation limit of the person who might have been able to provide them with a termination, but they're now so far into their second trimester because their first doctor wouldn't allow them, or I had someone who's doctor said, oh yeah, well, I'll just refer you to the hospital and they'll take care of that for you. And then by the time they got their antenatal appointment, there was an antenatal clinic appointment. They're not going to, they don't do terminations. Just this, the runaround that people can get, you know, they're obstacles that were deliberately created. Like when that 1998 legislation got enacted in WA, that made it a bit more legal than it had been before. It was a concession to the people opposed to abortion to include that two-doctor rule, and they knew that it was going to be an extra obstacle, and they did it anyway.
Mm. And kind of following from that, I guess, is obviously we still do have limited access in Australia, particularly, like you were saying, for, you know, more working class and rural areas. Mm. What changes need to be made, other than maybe some of the ones you've discussed, but what changes do you think need to be made to have like actual free access for everyone to abortion? Like, what is the ideal, what changes need to be made to create a more ideal situation?
So we need to make sure that the public hospitals, so in the different states they're run slightly differently, but whatever their area health services are called, they have to be obliged to establish facilities to provide abortion in their area health service. And they can do it freestanding, they can do it inside the clinic, you know, that has to be a basic minimum, that there can't be such a thing as doctor rings hospital and says, oh, hi, I have a patient who needs a termination, and the doctor on the end of the line says, oh, no, we don't do that here. That has to just be a thing of the past. That has to just not ever happen ever again. And if there are not presently doctors able and willing to provide the services in the in these hospitals, they have to recruit them and train them and do everything that makes it possible to provide these services in people's local area. So there's not such a thing as having to you know, drive for 4 hours because you, even though you're passing three hospitals on your way to get to a service, you know, a city, a major metropolitan city that can provide you care. So that's one thing. They should be establishing, like, this is generally at the state, but it can be a collaboration between state and federal governments, would be able to establish a network of reproductive health hubs of care, you know, centres of excellence, at least in the major metropolitan areas and as soon as possible further afield than that where your terminations can be provided, and why not make it where you can get your contraception and your pap smear and your sexual health screening, but whether they're freestanding or independent or whatever. In most of the states over the years have had sexual health services where you could go in and get your HIV test and you know, the rest of your sexual health screen, and you could be given a number so that you don't have to divulge your name. You've got your privacy. It doesn't meet up with the rest of your health record. So when you later on go to, you know, the hospital for some other thing, it's not just sitting there on your file and you know, your new significant other doesn't just sort of see that sitting there by accident somehow or whatever. So protect people's privacy. Make these services freestanding, like the sexual health services, if that's appropriate in the area, and recruit dedicated staff who are going to provide the care without judgment, with compassion, with respect, with dignity, and with excellence.
Yeah,
make it free.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Kamala. And I guess we're probably time to conclude the kind of interview now, but I guess, do you have any kind of final comments that you'd like to make? I mean, especially any sort of final comments you might like to make on, you know, the whole US, United States situation.
Yeah, I'd like to just make the point that reproductive justice is bigger than abortion care, because very, very often other elements of reproductive justice kind of get left behind. So I won't go into that in detail, but just to say that there is a lot more that needs to be done to make sure that every person who wants to become pregnant, maintain a pregnancy, avoid a pregnancy, end a pregnancy, someone who's got, you know, abnormalities in their health during their pregnancy, like all that care, that all needs to be better, and there needs to be, even someone, you know, like someone can be miscarrying and still not treated with dignity and respect. So there's a long way to go for a lot of these things, but my feeling is that out in the streets we need to be pushing forward to demand that abortion is free. Now, my firm belief is that one of the best ways we can demonstrate our solidarity with the women in the United States, women and pregnant people in the United States who are facing this threat to their abortion access, is to fight here for abortion to be free, safe, legal and accessible on demand without apology, because every new place that becomes a reality becomes its own beacon of hope and a good example to shine back to the rest of the world that this is possible. It's not rocket science. It can be done.
Mm, yeah. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Kamala.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's been really good, enlightening, good stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Carry on.